Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I talk to Ewan McFarlane of the Grim Northern Social, of Apollo 440, and of gatekeeper of Ace Chat, because that's what you're going to get today. I didn't want this one to finish. We was having a blast, and we had a good natter before we started, and we had a even longer natter when we finished, and that's a sign that there's a good connection between your guest and me. So I think you're in for a treat today. We're very similar in age, and we grew up listening to very similar music. So there's lots of excited voices on this, and lots of oh god, yeah, absolutely's. You're going to enjoy this one. Before we get on with it, a few thank yous. Big thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. This podcast is very, very proud to be part of that network. Thanks to 76 for producing this. We're going to start, hopefully, to be recording more episodes in a room together now that restrictions are finished. But also in the meantime, if I reach out to artists and they're further afield, I've now realised there's this thing called Zoom, which has kept us all going and kept us in podcasts for the last year and a half. And so what that means is sometimes the audio may not be, you know, as warm and as lush as it might be if we was both sitting in an expensive studio. But my lovely producer 76 is a genius, and what he does is he gets the audio from these Zoom chats and he makes it sound gorgeous. Also, if this is your first time listening to Off the Beat and Track podcast, then when you finish this Ace Chat with Ewan, then go and check out the back catalogue. You can find episodes with some of the artists that we speak about on today's episode. You can hear me talking to Simone, Primal Scream. That's a great chat. I think Simone might have been on twice, actually. You can hear me talking to Fatboy Slim, the Foo Fighters, Idlewild, actors like Maxine Peake, Amanda Abington, Joe Hartley, Michael Smiley. There's loads, absolutely loads. Go and get stuck in. There's probably 320 episodes now, so go and have a little scroll through, and you'll see loads of familiar names and faces, and I guarantee that they're a nice friendly chat, because so far everyone's been bloody lovely. I've been spoiled. And if that's not enough and you need spoiling, then there's a good way that you can spoil yourself and get more content and also support the podcast. And that is on my Patreon. So Patreon, which if you've listened to this podcast a lot, you hear me mention every time I do these intros. It's kind of like Instagram. It's a bit like Facebook. It's that social media type thing. But to access mine, it's a dollar a month, so like 79p. And then what happens is you can go on there and you can chat away to me if you want. You can send me messages. And then what I do is I put up playlists on there. I put up radio shows on there. I put up video episodes on there so you can watch all the podcasts. And then there's also like a big back catalogue on there of 200 or so episodes that have never been released to the public. So you can go and get stuck in over there and support the podcast. But I know that we've had a tough old few months, so pennies can be scarce. So don't feel any pressure to do that if you can. It's 79p a month. Thank you loads. If not, all I ask is that you subscribe or you give us a like, love, a share or a retweet on the socials. It all helps. So, yeah. Anyway, I think I'm done with all the waffle. Oh, just quickly, all of this stuff that I've just mentioned, one-stop shop, people, www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. That's beat and track, not beat and track. You see what I've done there? What I've done with the name? Yeah? All right, cool. Anyway, enough of my lispy Essex twang. You're treated to an ace chat now. Please enjoy today's episode of Ewan McFarlane. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beat and Track podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out, www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Keep me, Stu, with him. Right, we are recording. Ewan, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. We're trying to do that authentic thing like we ain't been putting the world to rights for the last 10 minutes. We've just pressed record, but we've already been having a chat and a rant. So so I think we're going to have a good natter today, mate.
Yeah, let's just hope we've not missed all the good stuff now.
Well, before we get on to your playlist and the songs that you've chosen today, mate, I just want to, you know, we're recording this on the 29th of July, as in England, where we're currently all restrictions have dropped. I know you're just outside of Glasgow. Is it pretty much back to normal up there, or are you a little bit behind us?
I would say, to be fair, we're a bit behind you guys. It definitely feels as if we're getting there, which is exciting, obviously, because it's been quite a hard slog. But we Nicola seems to be a bit more hard arse than Big Boris boy down south. So she's definitely kind of listen. Everybody's got their own opinions on it, but it would just be nice to get back to a bit of reality.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you, mate. I hear you. And with that in mind, just casting your mind back over the last 16... Every time I ask this question, I'm sure I had another month on, but I'm sure it's close to 16 months now. But how have you found it personally, and how have you found it creatively?
Okay, so personally, if... You've probably done loads of podcasts where people say the same thing. I actually had a lovely time. You know, I was very fortunate. Anybody that was close to me, they're still safe, which is the most important thing. I had some friends of friends of friends who had some bad news and you know, tragic stuff for families. But on a personal level, I had a brilliant time, you know, I really did. And with regard to, from a creative point of view, I've probably never been more creative in my entire life. I just threw myself right into it. And things, I think when you're being creative, Stu, the more you throw yourself into it on a daily basis, you become encapsulated in the whole thing. And when that happens, you really, really kind of get in a groove. And things just... I was waking up at 4 in the morning, and I had, I kid you not, nearly full songs written in my head, lyrics, guitar parts, grooves, and I was like, whoa, how the fuck did that happen? And it was really interesting. And needless to say, you need to get up at 3 or 4 in the morning, come to the studio and put it down, because if you don't, it's gone forever. So, yeah. No, I was good with it, mate.
Excellent. I mean, so was it a sort of conscious decision for, you know, as a musician, you know, and you're right, I've spoke to plenty of musicians that have said very, very sort of similar things, like, you know, they've always wanted to have the time because, you know, you're always out and about and doing all the things that musicians do, and to be, you know, forced to stop. And then I've spoke to lots that said their knee-jerk reaction was to just start writing, and it wasn't happening. Did it fall quite nice for you that it just it flowed?
Yeah, I was kind of I'm very, very obsessive when I get into the creative mode, and I think I'm still a nice person, but I'm not 100% because I'm so involved in what I'm doing. But I'm also very fortunate to have I've got a brilliant wife that supports me, and she understands completely. Same with the children, so I was pretty lucky, and creatively it just flowed so smoothly for me. It was lovely.
Oh, that's great to hear. Well, talking songwriting, let's start your playlist.
Yeah.
Track one, I want you to tell me, please, Ewan, the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
Okay, listen, there's probably 100 I could have picked for various different reasons, but for me, I love Black Dog, Led Zeppelin, because it's an intro that starts with a vocal, you know, and Robert Plant just goes, boom, there you go, right in your face. And literally 2 bars later, Jimmy Page comes in with that guitar riff, and it's like, oh my God, what about that? And then Bonham starts on the drum, you know, Paul Jones, and the groove's there, and it's like, for me, that's it. Nailed it completely.
So with that in mind, I mean, there's so many, you know, singles and huge tracks by Zeppelin that aren't necessarily that instant. You know, they've got songs that completely wig out, and but it didn't matter so much then. You know, there was, you know, artists were allowed to breathe and grow, and if it didn't happen on the first record, don't worry, we'll get there on the second record, and blah, blah, blah. The times have changed a hell of a lot, and with that in mind, I'm just interested to know, as an artist, the way that people listen to music now is quite different. By that I mean the technology that they get it on. Shorter attention spans, fast moving thumbs. You know, I'm sure like my kids, you've seen your kids, and it's the attention spans, they're whizzing through tracks and things. And just the accessibility of music now, like with all the streaming services, which I'm not hating on. I think there's pros and cons to all of this.
Of course, right. Yeah.
But, with that in mind, when you approach writing a song now, are you considerate of some of the changes in technology and some of the ways that you are now hearing lots of records starting with choruses and these kind of beautiful intros that we'd seen in years gone by? And there's plenty of artists that still do that. But I just wonder where you're... I'm making this a real meal of this question, but I hope you know where I'm going with it, Ewan.
Well, I totally get where you're going. I listened to your podcast with Jack Savaretti, and he was kind of talking about starting the choruses and stuff. So I totally get where you're coming from. On a personal level, if something comes... I write in so many different ways because... Obviously, my first love was the acoustic guitar. I picked up the acoustic and, if you like, wrote a song like a traditional singer-songwriter would have. I also, you know, I was very, very much involved in electronic stroke dance music to a certain degree with Apollo 440. So quite often we used to try and just find a hook, you know, whether that hook was 8 seconds long, and then we took the hook and we chopped it up and made it into a full track. So I don't think there's any rules, and I still do the same quite interestingly, even when I'm writing, if you like, these days, singer-songwriter songs. If I get a chorus in my head, I'll put the chorus down in the studio, and then I've not even wrote any of the rest of the song, for example, and it allows me to have that chorus and feed off it. You know, where can I find a verse for that? Do I need a bridge going to that chorus? So on and so forth. And I've always tried to write in that manner where I don't think there should be any rules personally. I do understand the whole corporate aeroplane thing, if you like, but never really been for me. And I understand that a lot of artists these days, in particular those that are signed to major record labels, they kind of have no option but to do that, because it's like, oh, where's the hook? Get the hook in right away. And I feel sorry for them. I also think that these days it's a pretty wonderful thing, because there's so many people doing the DIY thing that they can kind of do what they want as well. So I think there's still place for both these days. But me personally, I try not to get strung up on it too long and just do what comes naturally.
Do you think that's what you just said there, like in regards to the fact that DIY culture is certainly throughout the pandemic would have been as essential and as fully taken advantage of the DIY culture? And again, it's something that I love about podcasting. It's punk as fuck. It's like there's no rules, and I love that. And do you think the fact that, you know, there's 14-year-old kids making grime records, you know, indoors on their laptop, that, do you think it's that sort of thing that is almost kind of pushing them labels into thinking, well, if we're going to sign a band, we can't get it wrong anymore. We can't afford to get it wrong. We've got to work to almost a science of algorithms and just industry bollocks to ensure that 2.5-minute track is going to nail it on TikTok and going to, you know, it's going to get on the playlist and within 4 seconds. Do you think there's a pressure on them to kind of do that because everybody's out there doing it themselves now?
Yeah, I do, mate. I really do, because all of a sudden they don't hold the rule book anymore.
Yeah.
Which is fucking wonderful, by the way, because, you know, for such a long time, they got their big Doc Martin and they stood on top of it, and it was like, we'll let you breathe when we feel like it, that kind of bollocks. And it's just wrong in every artistic level. It's wrong, and they held back so many artists, even back in the day when they used to sign, you know, you get a major that would sign 5 bands because they sounded like the band that they actually signed, and they would sign the other bands, shelf them, and focus on this band that they believe in a wee bit more. Absolute. Talk about exploitation. It was awful. I think the shoe's in the other foot now, in a good way.
I heard, I mean, I might be wrong here, but I heard from quite a few people that generally sort of don't really talk that much shite, and they told me that was pretty much the case with Kasabian, that they were signed and they sat on them for so long because there may have been a conflict of interest, or, you know, and it was waited until the right moment, then it's like, okay, yeah, we'll give them a while now. And
I think also coming from that angle, that it must have been hard to sit in Kasabian for too long, because I wouldn't imagine that they'd have been putting up with that shit either. So
no.
I think they'd been having none of that, mate. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. All right, well, I'm going to take you back, mate. And for track two, I'm going to ask you to tell me, please, the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Okay, probably quite a strange one for most people, but emotion comes in many different levels. For me, I was literally a wee boy. I think I was maybe 10 years old. I was always heavily into music. I was brought up in quite a musical family. So I was brought up in the Beatles and the Stones and all that kind of stuff, which was wonderful. But all of a sudden, I heard the Specials, Too Much Too Young, and I was like, oh, what is that? What was that? And there was that kind of ska rhythm, you know, going on with it. And it was just, even being 10, I recognised that lyrically it was very, very different for me to what I'd been brought up with. And it was very social, and, you know, it was talking about, you know, young girls getting pregnant too young, blah, blah, blah. So for me, that emotion was, it was more like a what the hell. Yeah. And I'll never forget that. I'll never forget it. And then there was various things. I remember seeing the Specials on telly. I don't know whether it was, was it the Tube it used to be called?
Yeah.
Yeah, I made something like that. And I was like, whoa, because they were all dancing about. And it was like, it was mayhem on stage, but it was wonderful. And that, for me, that emotion was absolute, kind of chaotic in a way, but still relevant because it had a hard-hitting message as well.
And that was the thing. It was absolute chaos, you know, on stage. But slap bam in the middle was this deadpan Terry. Yeah.
How cool was Terry?
He weren't playing the game, was he? He didn't want to do... Everyone else going mental on stage, but he was just there, didn't crack a smile. And like, it was just such a beautiful mix of people, that band. And obviously the genius that was Jerry Dammers, there was so much stuff going on. Like, and it's weird that you choose that. One of my very, very earliest memories of music was putting 5p in a jukebox in a holiday camp in Great Yarmouth and putting on Ghost Town and just thinking, this doesn't sound like anything I've ever heard before. Yeah. And like, it was just... And when I saw... You know, a few years later, like or however long later, on Top of the Pops, like the video was just as eerie. You know, yeah. And Terry's face was just like, "Whoa, what? I don't know what's going on here." And it was, and I love the fact that sometimes you know you just can't. Some songs just sound out of time, and by that I don't mean you know to a metronome, like just don't sit anywhere. They just. Some bands have got some, and you've chose one later, which I'll pick back up on this then, because you chose one that goes in that list as far as I'm concerned. I'll pick your brains on it.
I'm curious to see what one that is.
Well, hearing Too Much Too Young, what was, if you had to pinpoint the emotion, Ewan, what was it?
The emotion was liberation. That was the emotion for me because, keep in mind, I was a really young boy. I could have picked many songs, but I tried to go back as far as I could. I could quite easily have picked the Beatles' Long and Winding Road because I was brought up with that. But I wanted to pick something that stood out on its own for me that wasn't related to growing up in my family. For me, like my old dear heard that and probably thought, oh my God, son, what is that? So it was kind of that post-punk feel as well, but I personally believe that the Specials globally are one of the most underrated bands ever.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Okay, track three. The song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Ah, okay, this is an interesting one. So, with regard to school, I had the pleasure. I went to school in high school in Scotland, and then I moved when I was 14 to just outside Toronto, where there was a mishmash of loads of British and Irish people, and we all hung about together because all our dads drunk in the pub together. So, at school in Toronto, when I first started high school, I remember hearing The Cult, She Sells Sanctuary. And I was, it just, bam, just hit me right in the back of the head. I was like, what is that? You know, and when I heard that, everybody was trying to do the Ian Astbury dance. And, you know, it was just, I just loved that song so much. It had so much energy. And Billy Duffy's guitar lick on it as well, the riff, really simple, which I love. I love things like that because I'm the furthest thing from Jimmy Page you can ever imagine. I can put my finger on one string and move up and down and create a good melody, and that's enough for me. And when I heard that, it made it accessible to everybody. Everybody that was maybe just picking up the guitar, post Ramones, if you like, because they for me, they started it. And then everybody that was picking up the guitar could, oh, guess what? I can play the She Sells Sanctuary riff. And it made it accessible, which was wonderful.
That's the song that sounds like it belongs somewhere else. It's like,
yeah.
I like The Cult. They haven't got any songs that sound anywhere near that sonically.
Yeah.
Like that record, if that come out tomorrow, nobody would go, oh, that sounds like that was recorded in like 1983, maybe. Like it sounds so fresh.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's perfect in every way, that record. I really do believe that. And his vocals, I mean, if we're talking intros, fuck me. Like,
I actually made a note of that because that intro can, because it kind of, it leads you into a false sense of security, doesn't it? Because it's got that lovely little picky riff, and then all of a sudden, bang, the drum kit starts, and it's like, what the fuck just happened there?
Yeah, yeah.
It's wonderful. Oh, there's the postman at my door. Excuse me. Cheers, mate. Thanks very much. Thank you.
I like to think he's going to spend the rest of the day whistling Sanctuary now. Oh, it's an absolute tune, that is. It's there's songs by bands, and I've probably mentioned it before on here, and it's lots of bands that are some of my favourite bands that, you know, for me, the Smiths are an incredible band.
Yeah.
They've done nothing else in their catalogue that sounds like How Soon Is Now. How Soon Is Now sounds like it's from another planet. Stone Roses, incredible band. They've never made another record that sounds anywhere near the sonic weirdness of Fool's Gold.
It's that
list of songs where, like, you just think, and Sanctuary's in there. It's like
the only personal opinion. Totally agree with you with the Stone Roses, but for me also another one that I would drop in for the Roses would be Wanna Be Adored.
Oh.
For that. When that came in and the baggy scene was out and I was just getting into that whole rave culture thing, when I...
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I heard that song as well. I was like, oh my God, thank you.
Yeah.
It was just a wonderful feeling.
Do you mind me asking how old you are, Ewan?
I'm 50.
Right, I'm 48. So we grew up listening to very similar music by the sounds of things. And I can avidly remember seeing, like, Top of the Pops, the episode where the Roses, the Mondays and the Inspirals were on it, and I was just thinking,
amazing.
I want to be in this gang. This is that's my tribe right there. Like, I'm all over that.
It was so good. It was so good, wasn't it? And I'm like a 50-year-old going on 23, unfortunately.
I know exactly what you mean, brother.
I keep getting constant reminders from my 20-year-old daughter. She's like, Dad, you're old. I actually disagree with you there, darling, but then I think about it and I think, okay, maybe
I my daughter turned 18 during lockdown. Uh-huh. And I've run my club for 29 years and in Essex. And I said to her, wow, restrictions dropped. When we reopen, you can come to my club. Like, because she'd never been clubbing, and she was just like, yeah, I'll think about it. And I was like, what? And then I actually thought about it, and I was just like, why would you want your first clubbing experience to be somewhere where your daddy's? Like, that's so fucking uncool.
I know, I totally get it, but in our heads, Stu, we think we're still the epitome of coolness, don't we? We can't get over it.
It's tragic, isn't it, mate?
It's tragic and it's hit me. That's what it is. And
absolutely.
I don't think we'll ever change. I can see myself sitting in another 20 years having the same attitude, having the same views. Okay, but you mellow out as you get a wee bit older. If you don't, you're going to end up in a fucking mental hospital.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I don't see myself changing that much. I still love and... you know, feel passionate about the things that I always did.
Absolutely. Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor. Egg Fried. it's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this, they have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. Tell me about school. How was it? I mean, tell me more about how it was going at such an important age, at 14, to then up sticks and move and be the Scottish kid, you know, somewhere strange. How was that?
Do you know what? For me, it was probably okay. But if I'm being honest with you, the reason I'd done it at the time, I was probably quite a handful. I was probably quite a cocky kid when I was 14, and I had a stepdad who was very good to me actually. And there was a couple of things came up that we had major disagreements. And one of these days, I woke up and I was very strong minded as a boy. I'll always remember that, and I think it's maybe served me well as times went on. But I remember thinking, you know what? I'm going to go and live in Canada with my dad that I've never really met before. And my poor mother was brokenhearted, you can imagine, but she was really cool and she never held me back. And she says to this very day, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because when I went there, I had to grow up really quickly. And I fitted in instantly well, because I was always into, I suppose, what was current, if you like, or what was up and coming. So when I went over there, I was very interested in hip-hop and breakdancing. I used to think I was a bit of a breaker, but I was absolutely shy, to be honest with you. But I used to try and pull the moves and get injuries and so on and so forth. So socially, I was accepted pretty well, and it made it very, very easy, because my dad's mates, as I mentioned, were all UK and Irish based. So within probably the first month, I had a whole new circle of friends that to this very day, they're like brothers to me, and lots of them became very successful. A lot of very kind of arty guys. So one of them ended up having a huge production company making music videos. He's made videos with the Rolling Stones, with DMX, with Arcade Fire, and he's done really great for himself. I've got another mate, Anthony Donnelly, who is absolutely, he's bonkers, but I love him dearly. He was the guy that was responsible for introducing, I suppose, rave music to North America. They'd done a documentary on him. There was a place called, I think it was maybe Hop 21 or Hop 23. He'll kick my ass for not being able to remember. But, you know, he was very responsible, and he still does it. He's still very proactive and, you know, kind of fighting the power and all that kind of thing. So I've got loads of mates that were, that's what they were all about. And they've not changed even now.
Nice. What was the first song you bought from a record shop?
Okay, first song. So the first single that I bought from a record shop, I think I was maybe about 11, and I had bought Come On Eileen with Dexys Midnight Runners. It was just a total anthem. And I remember going to youth club and school discos, and when it got to the bit where it was, come on, Eileen, to the right, the whole fucking youth club would put their hands in the air and they were clapping their hands. It was like, it was such a euphoric moment when you were that age. And by the way, it was a great tune. He was actually a great writer, Kevin Rowland. But the first album that I ever bought, I don't know if you remember, there was a ska album with various artists on it called Dance Craze.
Yeah, of course.
You remember it? Yeah.
I think there was a video as well of it.
Yeah, that's right. And you had the Selector, the Specials, Bad Manners.
Madness,
you know,
yeah.
Absolutely. So that was the first album. I had bought that before the single, but because you asked about a specific song, the song was, Dixie's Midnight Runners, Come On Island.
And you're right to say that's a tune, because I think 30 years of wedding receptions and family do's and, you know, your nan having her knees up to it and all of that stuff kind of cheapened it a little bit. And I think, like, you're completely right on Kevin Rowland. Like, that, you know, that first couple of Dexy's albums, fucking hell, are incredible. And I honestly think that the Come On Eileen is an absolute masterpiece of a record. Like, it's got everything, and it's just brilliant. And I think people are just probably a bit sick of it, and for that reason, sort of, a lot of time will disregard it as being anything other than the family disco record. And it's not; it's a fucking masterpiece. I really do think that.
And what people forget is that when we first heard that when we were young, it was so fresh.
Yeah,
it was like our teenage anthem, if you like. Mm. And I'll never forget that, because I've got nothing but happy memories whenever I hear it, because it takes me back to, I could be jumping into the TARDIS, takes me back in time, and I'm there, I'm in that hall, and I can see exactly what people are wearing, you know, all sorts of different fashion going on, guys walking about with leg warmers on and all that kind of shit. That's mental, wasn't it?
Were you talking about yourself then or not?
I tried everything, mate, to be
honest. I was just picturing you doing one of your shit backspins in front of your mates with a pair of leg warmers on.
That was afterwards. That was it. I was never quite sure. I was never quite sure who I was, I think. And then I think because of that, I just wanted to experience a wee bit of everything. Right, okay, there's New Romantics. Right, let's listen to some early Spandau stuff. Great music, by the way. And then obviously we went for that, and I remember watching Beach Street. Oh man, that changed my life. That was another life changing moment, because it was gritty, it was real, and you know, everything for the graffiti to the dancing to the music. You know, you had the fucking New York City Breakers going up against the Rocksteady Crew. I mean, it was incredible.
And the thing was, what made it, I think, so exciting was the fact that you couldn't really get more of it. There was only so much available, like, because it was so American. You know, you might see Melly Mel on Top of the Pops if you was lucky, or might see Bambaataa. But the rest of it, you know, you'd have to kind of hope that someone had a cassette. And, you know, these cassettes of, like, the electro albums that get passed around my school, one person had a copy of Subway Art, and that book... We'd all be like leaning over his shoulder trying to look at this graffiti that we couldn't see anywhere else. Yeah. And it was like, and I think that elusiveness of that scene made it, because we'd never heard anything like hip hop. Like, it was so weird and so American at a time when everything that, you know, all the films, everything that was coming out of America was so exciting and different and new. And, like, the early kind of hip-hop stuff that you was exposed to, and the breakdancing, and, it was just incredible, wasn't it?
That was a wonderful time in my life. I remember, actually, when I moved to Canada, I had already been into hip-hop, and my dad, when I got there, as a treat, because we were trying to find a bond with each other, which never really happened. We kind of fought like cat and dog, but we were best mates and greatest enemies, that kind of relationship. God bless his soul, he's no longer with us. But, you know, he bought me this, I don't know if you remember, a ghetto blaster called a Clairtone. And a Clairtone was basically, it had two tape decks in it, but one was a tape deck you pushed in, and one was a flip out, and it was a proper put it in your shoulder.
Wow. And
serious street status. So I went to school, you're allowed to take your ghetto blaster to high school over there, and I always remember seeing it in films before I went to Toronto. And at break time, at lunchtime, people used to gather on the stairs and actually break dance. And I was like, whoa, this is like the telly. was actually there. I wasn't breakdancing because I was absolutely shite in comparison to everybody else. But I would get back home in my basement and practice and try and nail a head spin, do my first windmill, wee things like that. Just great memories.
Love it. I mean, before we get on the next question, you mentioned that you know, your earlier years, you grew up in a very sort of musical household, and you mentioned the Beatles and the Stones. So was the stereo always on? And aside from them, what other sort of music was you being exposed to?
Growing up, when I was a boy at home?
Yeah.
Okay, so mostly the Beatles and the Stones. My mother was the Beatles, and my stepdad was the Stones. Without a doubt. I also grew up with things like Mum being Mum. She was kind of, there was a lot of ABBA kicking about. Brilliant songwriter, by the way, absolute genius, melodic genius.
Oh, incredible.
I remember there being quite a lot of Neil Diamond as well,
yep,
growing up. And then when I moved to Canada, my dad, he was actually a folk singer. And so he used to play guitar, and that was his job. That was his full-time job. So he would play things like Cat Stevens, Jim Croce, Bob Seger, stuff like that. So it was quite nice. I had all sorts of different, even from a very young age, all sorts, surrounded with all sorts of different music. And also, I remember my mum hearing Donna Summer and Barbara Streisand.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Streisand and playing that, and I was like, "Whoa, that's actually really quite cool."
Yeah,
because Donna Summer, she was a goddess, wasn't she?
Absolutely.
When she was doing her thing. So, no, great memories, mate.
Well, I guess the next ones could be the memories that you don't remember. For track five, I'm going to ask you for the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Yeah. So for me, I'll never forget the first time that I heard Voodoo Ray with a guy called Gerald. It was again, the reason I've put these songs down, because they were kind of all life-changing moments as such, but that one in particular for me was like, right, wait a minute, there's a new culture, there's something new happening. And when I heard Voodoo Ray, that was me. I started buying records. I would go to the record shop. I even started trying to DJ. I was a shit DJ as well, by the way. I couldn't mix at all because I was always inebriated with something else. But I certainly tried, and I used to hold dance nights in my local village, and I think everybody thought I was mad. They were like, "What are you doing? You know, nobody's going to come." A year later, there was queues outside the door, and I was probably responsible for the majority of the young village getting out their brains, which was fantastic.
It's a ridiculous record, isn't it? It's like,
so good.
And I just love the fact that you watch any kind of documentary on electronic music, on rave culture, on anything, know at some point, that's going to be the track that defines the most pivotal moment in any of it, because that is what that track done, in my opinion. I think it was just defined that time.
It changed my life, didn't it? It really changed my life, because all of a sudden, I was going out on a Thursday, and then I was falling back in the door on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
And I was like, my mum said, "You never phoned me." We never had mobiles back then, obviously. Yeah. I said, I know, I'm sorry, Mum, I'm sorry. I couldn't get to your phone. I was in the middle of a field. And she was like, "What do you mean you were in the middle of a field, son?" I said, "Well, you know, we just go to fields and we have a party." She says, And then she says, is that the stuff that's on the telly? Is that all that illegal stuff?
No.
Honestly, Mum, it's all about love. Everybody loves each other. I never told her what the reason behind that was. It was a certain little thing that you used to put under your tongue, and that was, it was good fun at the time.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Just hearing you talk about, you know, moving schools and then, you know, finding it relatively easy to you know, get in with and make friends and things like that. And so I imagine that, you know, you're quite a confident person. But yeah. With that in mind, I always like to ask guests as well that, especially musicians or anyone in the creative industries, because they're all ridiculously tough industries to forge careers within. So I'm going to ask you about drive and, you know, how driven are you?
Driven, you know what, mate? Even at this age, I am probably more driven than I've ever been. When I get something, when I work, I work. Right now, my wife and I both are working minimum 16 hours a day. Like, genuinely, every day. We try to take one day off at the weekend, but I had never released a solo record before, and my drive behind that was, like, just to go for it. So I don't do anything, no half measures with me. If I do it, I do it, and that's never changed. I've always been a go-getter, and I think it's important.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to take you home for track 6.
Okay.
Favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Yeah, the reason I've picked this song is simply because it was the perfect crossover track for me. You know, we had rock and roll, we had house music, we had the baggy scene all in the one track. And these guys, we were very proud of them. It's moving on up with Primal Scream. I could have picked Loaded, that was seminal, but I wanted to pick something that had lyrics and had Bobby Gillespie. You know, he'd done his thing in that video.
Wow.
It was just a dude, wasn't he? You know, when I hear Moving On, you've got the gospel singers, you've got Bobby doing a wee bit of Mick Jagger, you've got the kind of the piano, almost the house-like piano.
So good.
It was so good. And when I heard that, I was proud, because all of a sudden, a guy like from our area, if you like, was in the scene. And it's like, you know what? We're here. We're part of this as well. And for me, that was massive.
I don't just think that track was part of that scene. I think if you're going to talk between the, you know, the crossover at that point of, you know, your tracks like Voodoo Ran and all the stuff that was happening in electronic music and all the stuff that was, as you said, happening in rock and roll and the baggy scene, they defined that 100%. Like that album, you know, it's ridiculous. So ridiculous. And moving on up, you know, as somebody that's been playing indie records for the last 29 years in clubs, I sometimes find I can swerve having to listen to Loaded. You know, I'd rather go for I'm Losing More Than I Ever Had and just get his vocal over the top. I love that. Moving on up, doesn't matter. Anytime I hear that, it's joyous. Pure joy.
Yeah, 100%, mate. And you know, I defy anybody that can listen to that song and not have a smile on their face, because they're actually proper miserable bastards, aren't they, if that's the case?
Absolutely, absolutely. Not that you see Bobby smile that much.
Oh, look, but that's the joy in Bobby, though, isn't it? That's what he's all about. But the fact that you can create that joy and have such a stone face, that's an art form within itself.
Absolutely. I met him once when, in about 1997, I think it was around the time of sort of maybe sort of swastika eyes and stuff like that. And I was just in a record shop in Camden, and for some reason I had a camera on me. We was doing something with my then band, and I took a camera, and I just noticed that he was standing next to me looking through records. And I was like, fucking hell, he's like Bobby Gillespie. And I was like, hello, Bobby. And he was like, you all right? And he was like really lovely, really chatty. And I'd just seen them do their first, because they come to Essex and they played a small show in Southend. It was the first gig with Manny. And and I went there and the sound was terrible.
Right.
Obviously the band were the band, but the sound, whatever happened that night, weren't great. And I remember going to him, oh, I saw you at Southend the other night. And he was like, oh, yeah, the sound weren't too good. And I should have just gone, no, you're right. But I was like, no, it was great. And because I was just absolutely in order. I was talking to Bobby Gillespie. And I went, Bobby, I went, can I have a photo with you? And like, this is way before camera phones and stuff. And he was like, yeah, cool, man. And so he was chatting away and he was all smiles. And my mate got the camera, and just as he went to take it, I'm sort of like looking sort of towards him a little bit, and he was kind of like, went from being jolly to, I'm Bobby Gillespie, I've got to look strung out, and just kind of went, and like, the photo is like Bobby looking how Bobby looks in every photo, just like a rock and roller, you know, and I've just got this really confused, like, is he all right? Look. Like, what's just happened?
Turned it on in the name of the game.
It was great.
I remember hearing a story about him when I lived in. I spent quite a lot of time when I lived in London. I lived in kind of Maida Vale area, and there was a lot going on with various people. And I remember hearing a story: Bobby getting picked up at 5 a.m. to go on, I think, a European tour, and he literally to go on a tour for, I think it was 3 months. He had on his jeans, a pair of white Converse, a black T-shirt, a black leather jacket, and they had a white plastic bag with an extra T-shirt and a pair of pants in it. And that's what he took on tour with him. And I thought, legend, love it.
Keep it simple. All right. Well, look, we've spoke about DJing, and this is your this is the part where you get to play DJ and tastemaker. And for the last question, you know, I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me the song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear.
Okay. So when I was going to get a bit self-indulgent and decided not to, because I didn't want to come across as being overconfident, which is probably what I am anyway, so forgive me for that. I was going to pick a Grim Northern Social song called Clash of the Social Titans, and I thought, he can't do that, he fucking wrote it. So I moved from there. Of late, as I've been maturing in life, I've been listening to a lot more kind of modern Americana, if you like. I don't even know what you call it. There's so many genres that I get confused by it. I really do. To me, it's rock and roll, or it's southern rock and roll, it's house music, or it's techno. All these subgenres completely confuse me. So the song that I ended up picking is not a new song. It's been out for a good few years, but it's by a band called Houndmouth, and it's called Sedona. And I love this band. I just think the guy doesn't write a bad tune. The band don't write a bad tune. They're all good. But Sedona, for me, is melodically fantastic, and it's got angst towards the end. It's got delicacies, and I think it's a perfect kind of, well, what I would back in my day call a pop song, but you can't even call it a pop song these days because people tend to think of pop in a completely different light. So sure. Yeah, Houndmouth, and the track is called Sedona.
Wonderful. Well, you and me put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast. So we'll put on all the tracks that we've spoke about, your choices and some of the other ones that we've thrown in the mix. And obviously we'll throw in your track as well, so people can go and explore everything that we've been chatting about today. So looking ahead to the rest of the year, and hopefully a time that's going to be more connected and more similar to what we was used to, you know, a couple of years ago. What are you most looking forward to personally, and what's going to be happening professionally?
I think my answer's the same as many musicians: get out and play live again. It's the ultimate buzz, especially when you have a good night.
Yeah,
that is really, there's no feeling like it. And by the way, that doesn't matter whether you're playing in front of 40,000 people or 40 people in a tiny room, because you can create just as much energy in a room with 40 people as what you can outside with 40,000. So really looking forward to getting playing live again, and just going to be relentless. I'm going to try and release 3 albums in the next year and a half.
Wow.
I'm pretty confident it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because I've set myself that target, so I need to step up to the plate, I suppose, and do what I need to do. So it is going to be insane, it's going to be busy, but you only live once, mate, so you've just got to go for it.
Absolutely. And if listeners want to keep up to speed with everything you're going to be doing in the coming year, where's the best place to keep up to speed?
Okay, I would say obviously all the socials, but I think for any artist, you're better coming to the artist's website. I've got a website called Ewan McFarlane Music. I'm just trying to get people to give us their email addresses. We'll send stuff out. There'll be your usual free downloads and this, that, the next thing. And I think it's really important that people know that if the majority of the public had to go to the artist's websites, it's easier for the artist to actually earn a proper living as well.
Yeah.
That's so important. You know, if you can get stuff from a band or an artist's website instead of whatever social, you know, other platform it is, it really, really helps the artist so much. So I'm a big thumbs up for that one.
Absolutely. Well, we'll tag you in everything when this comes out, and we'll add the web address to the bio that accompanies the podcast, so people are, it's just a click away. Ewan, you've been an absolute delight, mate. Like, I've had so much fun.
You've been an absolute delight. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed myself. So thanks for having me.
Oh, mate, absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thanks, mate.
Okay, bud. Take it easy, mate. Thank you.
Oh, what a wonderful natter. Oh, I'm still buzzing. I'm recording this literally just after we finished our chat. Sometimes you have them chats where you just think, oh, man, I wish I lived around the corner. Like, I'd pop out and have a beer with him. Like, it was a lovely chat. Really, really enjoyed that. It's so nice when, the guests will name drop something that you instantly go, man, it was exactly the same for me. And it makes for a really nice, kind of warm and excitable chat. So, yeah, huge thanks to Ewan. Yeah, go check out the website, go follow him on the socials, and in the meantime, I'll be back next week. As mentioned at the beginning, why not go and explore the back catalogue and go and get stuck into 300 plus chats with all your favourite musicians, comedians, producers, actors, DJs. They're all over there, so go and have a rummage through and find something that you want to listen to. One-stop shop, www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next time. Be excellent to each other. Much love. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Keep me, Stu Whiffin. Ain't it funny?